Okay, thanks, Jonathan. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to those on the webcast. You know, when we announced the Spectra acquisition last September, we were pretty excited. But even, I think, more so today, as we're seeing, in my view, a renewed optimism in the energy space. Now, despite yesterday's up and down in the oil markets, I think things have generally stabilized on price compared to last September, and capital's flowing back. We're seeing excellent cost improvements, including on technology side. And I think I would say more generally, energy is again being recognized as an important economic driver. So this mid-year update is our first meeting since we closed the deal. And given the expanded scope of the business, we're really planning to make this a permanent fixture, if not more frequently even during the year. We've just completed, as you know, a very large combination and broaden the shareholder base. So today, we'll talk about our approach to the business, our key priorities, which you see briefly on the slide here, and update you on the growth and synergy capture. There are a few themes that we hope shine through today. With this single transaction, we've diversified our cash flow and opportunity set, extended growth, and effectively repositioned our company well for the future. We just had day 100 of since the closing yesterday. We've made great progress on integrating the assets, the operations, and the people in a very short period of time. The objective what we had was to get out there quickly, make early progress, and we're hitting our targets. We believe we have a very attractive value proposition combining organic growth, a very low-risk profile, and premium dividend growth. Now, over the last 18 months, we made a step change as well in our balance sheet. We have great access to capital from multiple sources that John will take you through, and we think that will optimize our overall cost of capital. And finally, strong embedded growth, our backlog, and the best competitive position we believe in the business all contribute to our outlook of 10 to 12% average annual dividend growth through the next decade. The last time we presented our business plan was almost 2 years ago at Enbridge Day in the fall. A lot has changed, obviously, since then. The Spectra deal is a game changer for us. So before I get to the priorities, I want to spend just a minute on what led to this deal. If you go back all the way to 2001, we were weighted about 50-50 between oil and gas infrastructure. Between then and 2015, we went through a major growth phase and successfully put about $43 billion of capital into the ground, much of it crude oil infrastructure that was there to support big growth in Western Canadian volumes. Now, we knew this growth spurt was going to heavily weight us to oil, but we wanted to capture those highly profitable investments while they were right there in front of us. And that drove, as you see, exceptional dividend growth and value creation for our shareholders. At the same time, we had a very positive view on natural gas fundamentals, and that gas, in any pricing scenario, would be very strong. Those factors led us to think about ways to diversify the opportunity set and extend our growth into the future. So we outlined that priority. We talked about that with investors and our criteria for what that would need to look like, which you see in the slide here. Now, this was a difficult situation in a way because our liquids business had and still has highly visible and secured growth and solid future prospects, and its long-term stability is intact even in a weaker price environment. So, jeopardizing the low-risk profile in the name of diversification is what we didn't want to do. So the question was, how do we capitalize on these natural gas fundamentals while maintaining the overall risk profile? You'll know that most of the gas infrastructure companies out there are midstream focused with profiles, frankly, that are inferior to ours. But Spectra stood out as a growing but low-risk gas pipeline and utility company with a growth platform that would significantly move our needle. We were convinced that Spectra would fully diversify us while protecting the stable and predictable cash flow value proposition. So this is what we look like today. We believe we have the best natural gas and crude oil platforms in North America. We're well diversified and positioned for organic growth in several areas here. The business risk is low, and we have a strong balance sheet and credit ratings. In a nutshell, the way we look at it is we have a solid utility-like business with superior returns and much higher growth than the pure utility space. And we think that makes us a must-own investment now and at any time, depending what's happening in the markets. It's been 3 months since the deal closed, and things are progressing well, as I said earlier. The investor response, we think, has been very positive to the strategy and to the industrial logic for the deal. There are three priorities that guide how we're going to maximize value in this much larger business. Number one, focus on organic growth, because frankly, that's what we do best, and that's what adds the most value. Number two, minimize risk and ensure stability and predictability of cash flows. And three, streamline the enterprise to optimize returns and cost of capital. Let me start with the organic part of this. Our view is that the North American energy fundamentals are exceptionally strong. In fact, the combination of unparalleled unconventional resources, technology that's far ahead of the rest of the world, and a 30% improvement in costs will make North America a global energy exporter in the not-too-distant future. That's going to translate into infrastructure opportunities for us. Overall in North America, $700 to $900 billion available over the next little while. Our assets are extremely well positioned. As you can see, we move about almost 30% of the liquids in North America and now 20% of natural gas. Our systems are uniquely characterized by what we refer to as supply push from the low-cost basins on this map here, and direct last-mile connection to demand-pull markets. Whether those demand-pull markets are PADD 2, 3, and 4 refineries, sourcing crude from our liquid systems with direct connections, or ever-growing northeast and southeast utility customer load for the gas business. These markets aren't going away soon, neither are our assets that feed them, which makes this map and these assets extremely valuable. I don't want to overlook the gas utilities. Frankly, I love these businesses. Both are located in Ontario's strong economy with a very long track record of success and above-average rate-based growth. And then, of course, there's the NGL platform that's ideally positioned for improving prices, feeding growing domestic and global demand. This chart here proves out that we're already capitalizing and generating excellent growth. And I'm very confident we'll capture solid opportunities, organic ones, for many years to come. Now, there's three observations about the left-hand side of this slide here. First, we've got $31 billion of projects coming into service through 2019 or shortly thereafter. $14 billion is scheduled for this year, $4 billion next, and $13 billion in 2019. The second thing is secure growth is very nicely balanced across liquids, gas, and the utility business. The bars that you see here represent 30 projects, most of which are less than $1 billion in size and are extensions and expansions of the existing assets, which in this environment helps mitigate permitting risk. And third, this $31 billion is actually $4 billion higher than when we announced the Spectra deal, which demonstrates some early progress, great progress actually, in securing a very healthy backlog. Now, these projects are going to contribute a large amount of incremental EBITDA, and the chart on the right shows that we expect about $2.5 billion of incremental EBITDA even before the Line 3 replacement in 2019. This EBITDA, importantly, is from long-lived assets, which by itself support considerable dividend growth in the coming years. Here's a quick snapshot of the most recent additions I was referring to. In the last couple of months, we've secured two new gas projects, the $500 million Spruce Ridge project and the $1 billion T-South expansion, both in B.C. Bill Yardley is going to give you some background on these, further background, and talk about the open season results that just closed out on June 2nd. These are solid, fully backed projects that are exactly what we expected coming out of the Spectre deal. And this week, we also finalized the expansion of our German offshore wind project, bringing that investment to over $2 billion. This is a solid near-term project with long-term PPA. When we announced the Spectre deal, we indicated a probability backlog of $48 billion, which we're going to be updating at the next Enbridge Days at the end of the year here, and that would extend our growth beyond 2019. Of that, we estimated we capture about $5 to $6 billion a year to support that post-2019 period. Given our track record of securing projects in the past and this recent couple of months here, I don't think this is an aggressive assumption at all, and the team is going to provide more insight into why we think that's the case. I want to pause here for a minute, though. Most companies don't venture beyond the next couple or 3 years, so I think it's a testament to our development capability and the competitive positioning of our assets that we're talking about the next decade. But it does bring me to how we're going to filter opportunities and allocate capital in a much larger company and one where we have a lot more potential investments coming at us. In fact, as I look at the expansion and extension possibilities around the existing assets alone, there's not going to be a shortage of opportunity here. But we are going to be highly disciplined, which means that we're not going to win every project, and nor would you want us to, in my view. There's a lot of capital flowing into this industry right now, competing with us, and frankly, doing things that we won't do. A couple of examples. Companies and private funds are taking commodity and volume risk with shorter contracts and weak credits to gain exposure to this asset class. Passive investors are making acquisitions at multiples that don't make sense to us, and others are putting capital at risk before having commercial backing. Today, there's a lot more speculative capital chasing infrastructure than I've ever seen in my career. Now, the good news is that with pipe in the ground and the great competitive positions you saw on the map, we're going to win our fair share of those projects. But my point is, we're not going to compromise our investment discipline. In that vein, let me talk about how acquisitions and, for that matter, divestitures are going to fit in here. There's two cases where we'll be serious about acquisitions. For us, larger scale opportunities have got to come with platforms that spawn organic growth on their own and optionality to future growth. Otherwise, we're just buying cash flow. A case in point is the Spectre assets, which are accretive to our long-term growth. And if you go back, Consumers Gas was the same type of story. We will consider smaller-scale opportunities to fill in the strategy. We did that on the Seaway acquisition at the time, or even more recently, Dakota Access, both of which, frankly, we jumped on because they were linchpins to a strategy, market access for the liquid system. It's unlikely you're going to see us doing a large-scale deal anytime soon because we're quite happy with the organic platforms that we have. We'll also rationalize assets that have limited growth so we can optimize returns by redeploying that capital into organic growth. And we've already monetized, as you saw, over $2 billion that fit that category. From here on, we're going to evaluate opportunities that release value when we see it. It's also our job to think about the broader capital allocation options to maximize value. The chart here illustrates free cash flow net of dividends that we expect to generate from existing assets and secured projects that are now in execution. And importantly, John's going to go through this in more detail, we'll be entering post-2019, only a couple or so years from now, with even stronger credit metrics. We're forecasting in the range of $20 billion in free cash in this 20 to 24 period, which is available for redeployment in ways that maximize value. We've been faced with this exact same picture in the past at various times and always found economic investments. The preference is to redeploy free cash to organic growth. But depending on the quality and size of those opportunities we see then, we'll also have the option to do other things, like boost the dividend payout closer to that of our peers. The point is that we're going to explore all means of releasing value for our shareholders. I want to move now to the second priority, maintaining a low-risk profile. There's a lot of talk and focus about growth today, but there's an equally important part of the shareholder value equation for us, and that's minimizing risk to ensure we achieve the lowest cost of capital, and that's critical, as you all know, in maximizing opportunities to make highly accretive investments. Minimizing risk also ensures stability and predictability of cash to support the highly transparent dividend outlook, and that's really important to us. At the corporate level now, aside from the business units, we really attack risk in three ways: diversification, strong commercial underpinnings, and maintaining the safety and reliability of our systems. I'm going to start with that last one first. Investors, you all here, rightly assume we're managing this priority. But I'm going to say what I say to the people across our company every day. We can have the best growth in the industry, but if we're not world-class on safety, environmental protection, and operational reliability, nothing else is going to matter. I'm not trying to be dramatic here, but this is simply the reality of the infrastructure business. If you're not focused on this, you'll eventually lose the confidence of the public, your customers, and of course, your regulators. In addition, safety and reliability protection, maintenance spending that we have supports the revenue line. If you minimize downtime, you serve your customers well, you're more dependable, and you keep the meter running. We set aside maintenance and integrity spending first, and we're focused on being at the forefront of all the elements that you see here. This year, we're going to spend roughly in the order of $1.4 billion on maintenance and integrity, so you can assume that level roughly over the coming years. I encourage you to challenge us and others on safety and reliability because it's critical to success in today's environment. And not every company looks at this the same way when it comes to maintenance, integrity management, technology, safety culture, and so on. So my point of this is that I think this is a key differentiator. One of the best things about the Spectra deal was that it rebalanced our portfolio and long-term opportunity set. The natural gas business now represents almost half of the EBIT, and our secured projects are similarly balanced. Our secured projects are also well diversified, as I mentioned earlier, around size and geography, which minimizes execution risk across a much broader set of projects. The rating agencies, by the way, when we reviewed the transaction and subsequently in their reports, took note of this exact picture when they issued their commentaries. The most important driver of stability and predictability of cash flows is the commercial underpinning. Now, you've no doubt heard lots of companies talk about fee-based or contract revenues, but we believe we have the strongest commercial underpinning of assets in the sector. Almost 100% of cash flows secured under long-term contract or similar arrangements. 93% of our non-utility long-term commitments are from investment-grade customers or equivalent. That really shone through when oil prices were at their lows a couple of years ago. These factors were a big consideration in assessing how Spectra would fit with us. The pies you see here are virtually the same before and after the deal. Again, this is a differentiator we intend to stick to the model. The proof's in the results. When the energy downturn happened, our cash flows kept growing and were highly predictable, and the same can be said of the legacy Spectra assets. We're not going to dilute the commercial underpinning that we've assembled here. This is such an important issue, in fact, that the business unit leaders and John will come back to this. The final element of managing risk is financial strength. Through the crisis and the commodity downturn, the resiliency of the business model and our financial position proved their worth. Even so, we bolstered the balance sheet for an extra level of protection during our capital build-out. At the beginning of 16, you'll recall, we made a decision, a tough one at the time, to get even further ahead of our equity funding needs. We raised $5 billion in 2016 across the Enbridge Group. That effectively funded our equity requirements through 2017, and I think that was well received by our shareholders. Now, if there was any doubts about the resolve on this, we funded 100% of the Spectrum deal with equity, and we added another $2 billion to that through our asset monetization program. When you combined that with the significant diversification benefits of the deal, we feel we have made a step change in financial strength and lower risk. On dividend policy, Enbridge and Spectra had different payouts. We maintained our conservative payout of 50 to 60% of ACFFO, which puts us at the very strong end relative to the peer group. We think that's prudent given the magnitude of our capital program at the moment. But given the strong balance sheet, growing and high predictable cash flows, we've got flexibility beyond 2019 if warranted. In addition to the growth and maintaining low business risk, we're now focused on streamlining. In the last 2 years, we've made great strides in cost efficiency across Enbridge, but with our new larger footprint, they'll be even more critical and there's more opportunity. So there's three main areas here. Number one, you'll recall we estimated run rate synergies of $540 million out of the Spectra deal. We're pleased, very pleased, in fact, with the progress so far. When we announced the deal, actually, we were ready. We had begun planning before that, and then after we announced a more detailed synergy capture plans, and within 3 weeks of close, we laid out the entire organization and completed the initial wave of synergies. We expect to get 40 to 50% of the $540 million this year, another 30% in 2018, and the rest in 2019. So we're right on target. We also identified roughly $260 million of tax synergies starting in 19. Legacy Spectra assets would otherwise be taxable by then, but the combination allows us to reduce overall tax. There are some other streamlining opportunities that we didn't build into the economics of the deal, but are showing early promise, namely corporate efficiencies and commercial synergies. There's going to be a continuous drive for efficiency. We've started that a couple years ago, actually, at Enbridge, which is being led by an executive member reporting to me, Karen Radford. Over time, we think there's upside to the 540 as we centralize support functions, streamline, standardize, and really work the supply chain. On commercial synergies, a much larger and diversified asset base is bound to allow us to offer customers with a wider range of options and commodities through the value chain. We've begun identifying commercial opportunities. Now, Guy is going to take you through an early win related to revenue optimization on Express Platte and potential connections and expansions. Bill and Cynthia will also highlight some of their opportunities. So the point of this one is that further cost savings and synergies down the road provide us support for the 10 to 12% dividend growth beyond 2019. Finally, with the completion of the EEP strategic review, let me just outline the role that sponsored vehicles play at Enbridge. As we've said, we believe that sponsored vehicles can be effective and efficient way to hold and grow our energy infrastructure assets. Over the long term, I think that's been proven in their ability to attract capital in most market conditions. The objective of these vehicles is to play a role in optimizing our overall cost of capital for the group. But to be clear, we realize that to be effective, we're focused on ensuring they have strong investor propositions in their own right. By restructuring EEP, taking MEEP private, and simplifying DCP, we've streamlined the structure. These vehicles hold critical infrastructure assets, low-risk commercial structures are there, and they come with highly visible standalone visible growth plus potential for drop-downs. They all have strong balance sheets and distribution coverages, so they have self-financing capability. To reiterate, we have no plans to combine SEP with any other of our sponsored vehicles or transfer the Midcoast assets to SCP. Further on SCP, we think this vehicle is a very important part of the Enbridge family now, and enhancing that SCP being strong will continue to allow us to improve and grow our natural gas business. Once through its organic program, we have top-quality drop-down opportunities. Valley Crossing and Vector are two examples. So hopefully through this process, we've demonstrated our support and commitment to be successful with our sponsored vehicles, and we're confident they're well-positioned and strong at this point. We'll continue to evaluate opportunities to simplify or purify where applicable, but that would be in the context of refining and enhancing what we already have. Let me recap now the big picture, then we'll get to questions. This slide recaps the priorities and early progress in the context of a much larger enterprise. A common thread through all of this that you see here is that the Spectra deal was transformative and is going to play a key part in our future. We've got $31 billion in strategic and economically attractive organic projects in execution that's going to drive ACFFO growth. You saw that with the bar chart. We'll continue to be disciplined on capital and making sure that we're focused mainly on organic growth. We meaningfully diversified the cash flow and opportunity set to further minimize our overall risk. Through several actions, we made a step change in our financial strength. Streamlining the company will be a big priority as we've made great progress on target synergy capture so far. We're looking for ways as well to further enhance efficiencies and focused on portfolio management to optimize the overall return. And of course, as I just mentioned, I think we've taken concrete action to simplify and strengthen our sponsored vehicles. These priorities here that I've gone through and the actions support the basic value proposition, which will be familiar to our longtime shareholders and equally attractive to new investors. Basically, we offer a unique combination of strong organic, stable, predictable cash flows, and premium dividend growth. We've had the strong trajectory of dividends and total returns, as you can see here. In fact, in the last couple of years, we've increased the dividend, 3 years actually, by 60%. Our business model has worked, and we're confident it will continue to deliver superior value as we move through as a much larger and more diversified business. In closing, let me just talk about how this all comes together with two things. First, our confidence around future dividend growth, which we expect to average 10 to 12% through 2024. That confidence is essentially driven in the early part by $31 billion in secured projects through 2019. After that, it's the strength of the platforms in organic growth, contractually rising returns on the asset base that we've talked about in the past, and flexibility, some flexibility in the payout, all of which support the 10 to 12% growth rate after 2020. We feel very strongly about the dividend outlook, and it's a priority for us to deliver that premium dividend outlook to our investors, as we always have. The second thing and final thing is the strength of our commercial underpinning and predictability of cash flows really reflect a utility-like investment. However, this comes with a much higher dividend growth than offered by utilities. So before I pass it on to the team, let me just comment here. We focus very heavily on succession at Enbridge. You're going to see the depth, not just with the people speaking today, but the executives that aren't here and throughout the organization. It's very important that we stood up the organization well on day one. I think that was accomplished. And maintaining stability and continuity of management was extremely important. So today you'll see the usual suspects, but we also have Bill Yardley, who leads the gas transmission and midstream business, building on what's been accomplished in the Spectra legacy assets to this point. And that was key for us to make sure that we retained the critical elements of the gas value proposition that we were actually acquiring. And then Cynthia Hansen is in a new role overseeing the two utility businesses. So before We get to them in terms of the business units and John with finance. Let me just open it up to questions at this point. We have a question here. Bob?
Good morning. Rob. Rob Cattelier, CIBC. I was wondering if you could help us with the returns from the capital you're deploying here. Maybe we're not linking the right numbers, but you mentioned $31 billion of secured, generating $2.5 billion of additional EBITDA. It might still be accretive to your existing your trading multiples. It does seem like a relatively high multiple to construct. You did also mention the competitive environment for issuing for competing for projects. And maybe you could link those two things and give us some indication as to how much capital you have to deploy annually in the 2019 and beyond phase to achieve those per share growth targets that you set out.
Okay. Well, that's a good question, actually. The $2.5 billion is, really doesn't reflect the full implementation of the 31. If you look at the 31 relative to the full increase in EBITDA that we're projecting out in the 2019 area, you'll see that the multiple comes down. So you're dealing with an odd period there in 2018 with the 2.5 that I was talking about. But certainly, you know, generally speaking anyway, the EBITDA multiples that we're investing at are very, very opportune, let's just call it, anywhere from that 6 to 7 times range. I think if you just work through the chart there, you'll see that that bears out. I'll also say, though, that some of the investments naturally come with upward sloping returns, so you're not getting that on day one, which we like, in fact, because in those cases they're contractually underpinned growth in growing EBITDA because of the contractual underpinnings and additional commitments that are provided by the customers. In terms of the competitive environment, I think that's a great question, too. You know, as I alluded to in my remarks, there is a lot of capital entering the business, and I think our biggest challenge is going to be making sure that we keep the discipline and not get carried away. I think, to be honest, we don't perform very well in auction-based type situations where assets are being exposed to a whole bunch of players coming in. We do best where it's organic, right around our assets. To your question about, you know, what kind of numbers we're talking about, I think, you know, underpinning that 10 to 12% dividend growth, there's three things. There's about $5 to $6 billion assumed annually in spend from the backlog beyond 2019. As I said, I don't think that's a stretch at all. In fact, our problem is going to be, you know, how we sift through the number of projects coming at us. So it's probably 5 to 6, I would say, Rob. And then, of course, as we said, we've got some room in the payout. By 2019-20, we'll be at the very low end. So we've got some room between the 50 and 60%. And then, of course, you've got this upward sloping natural profile that we have with some of the assets. So I think that's how that all comes together. Hopefully that answers it.
That's very helpful. If I can just have one more quick one. I think at your last Investor Day, you talked about building out the U.S. Gulf Coast, and you were at the formative stages of a business plan there. This might be better handled by some of the business line managers later, but today I got the sense that you see North America progressing more and more towards an export-oriented market, so it would seem to me that that strategy would take an increasing priority and importance in your in your strategy. Is that?
I think you've picked up on it for sure. If you look at North America and the competitive advantage that we have in finding oil and gas cost-effectively, it's just a natural that we see a lot more exports. You're seeing it already. Crude oil, natural gas, you know, LNG is moving off the Gulf Coast, and there's going to be a lot more. We're probably going to see North America being the largest participant in market share within LNG over the next couple of decades. And you're seeing NGL exports and refined products. So the export market is a huge opportunity for sure. On the Gulf Coast strategy, you know, it's probably one of Guy Jarvis's top three priorities. So he's going to cover that. But all I'll say at this point is We had actually, made some early progress in our thinking last year, probably early in 2016. We then got right into the Spectra assessment. So, to be honest with you, we thought that we had to focus our energy on that, our time on evaluating that. We did that, but I would say having access to the water is important for us in the future, for the fundamentals we just talked about. So that's going to be a big priority. I think I'm going to, there was one question first, and then I'll go to Linda. Yes.
Hi, Becca Followill, U.S. Capital. Over time, the MLPs under the parent, the yields tend to converge. Can you talk a little bit how there's a pretty wide disparity between the EEP and the SEP yield and how you prevent those from neutralizing or SEP from coming up to the EEP yield? And then the did you hear me okay?
I think I got it so
okay.
Far. Go ahead.
Yeah. And then the second question is, are there any plans to do some swaps of assets, such as moving some of the liquids assets from SEP over to EEP and then the gas assets back over to SEP?
You know, that's in the category, as I mentioned earlier, as some refinements. I think at this point, frankly, in the SEP's case, the fact that Express Plat is in there probably is not a huge factor in terms of its overall valuation. But I would say in terms of purification and getting maybe to the final end game, that's a natural one. I think that probably makes some sense. In terms of the yields, obviously the current market conditions in the MLP, I mean, they've all been affected if you look at the compendium of MLPs out there. So I don't think we're that much different in terms of where yields have moved, at least over the last little while. Look, I think SEP very clearly is a fantastic MLP, frankly. Great growth, highly visible growth, strong balance sheet, good coverage, the distribution has increased, and they've got all of this organic growth in front of it. So I think we've got to be patient. The value proposition, certainly will surface there and improve the yield from here, in my view. EEP probably needs a little bit more seasoning after the restructuring here. Again, pure play, strong commercial structure, great outlook. The growth rate there is highly visible with the drop-down opportunities at book value, by the way, great options for EEP to hold. So I think we probably need a little bit of time here to get that fully reflected. But we're very pleased with the strength of both of those vehicles. Oh, yes, Linda, sorry. Oh, can we get her mic? Okay, I think it's going now.
So I think there's huge economies of scale in this sector with cost of capital being your largest cost of capital. But, at some point there's risk of bumping into diseconomies of scale, at least in some parts of your business. And you kind of touched on it when you answered Rob's question about screening for opportunities, that's your challenge. You actually have this overabundance of opportunities, and yet these small opportunities are doable. I think you can see where I'm going. So, as you're a larger organization, there's a huge opportunity cost to using a lot of time on these small projects. Do you plan to high grade and based on size maybe and just drop some of the smaller opportunities, use your affiliates for them, or maybe decentralize some of your corporate development function to allow head office to focus on the larger opportunities? Can you just walk us through how you're going to manage that?
Well, I think it's a very good observation, Linda, and something that, from a management point of view is right in front of us, just given the opportunity set. First of all, we depend on our business units. It's a decentralized strategy, I guess, if you will, in terms of how we let the business units manage their business, grow their business, and we really depend on them to move it forward. But ultimately, we do have a capital allocation process between all of those business units at the corporate level. And one of the first things we did, and I think this is why it's a good question, and it recognizes the need for a big focus on integration. with a bigger opportunity set, how do we manage these? So we've gone through and concluded that there's certain criteria that we're going to have. And part of the integration actually is getting to all the business units and sharing what that criteria is going to be so we don't waste a lot of time on things that probably are not going to pass the filter. So, it's definitely right in front of us. I think we can manage it with good discipline. I'd rather have that problem than a dearth of opportunities. One more question, yeah.
So just in terms of other aspects of your stewardship, how do you manage the culture, et cetera, in a bigger organization and make sure that that doesn't get diluted as well as you expand geographically?
Yeah, well, culture in an organization is, I guess it's one of the softer issues that we talk about, but it's extremely critical. Maybe I'll answer it this way. If you don't have alignment on things like safety, approach to investment criteria, you could spend a lot of energy over the next several years trying to line those two up. And we've seen this in the past in our industry and more generally with M&A. And so we took that into account as we considered Spectra. We had the advantage there of knowing Spectra very well, not just in doing business together, but in competing against them. And so we knew at the outset that we had a pretty good alignment on some key issues, and of course we knew the management team. But we did do some work on cultural fit before we proceeded, and I can assure you that's a big focus of the integration team right now to make sure that everybody in the organization is energized and pushing towards the same goals. You know, we can direct traffic as management, but we really do need everybody pulling in the same direction. So we have a plan to make sure that everybody in the organization now sees the vision and how we're going to move the company forward. There was another question, I believe, here. Okay, go ahead.
Do one last quick question here. We've got to keep it moving.
We're tight on time? Okay.
Andrew Kusky, Credit Suisse. Al, maybe if you just describe where you see Enbridge Inc. as an end state basis and really the raison d'etre for Enbridge Inc. and the affiliates. Is it ultra capital light at the top of the house, very limited interests on an ownership basis of the underlying, and then effectively just having cash flow pour into the parent?
Yeah, I mean, let's look at it, Andrew, in two extremes, a pure holdco or I guess the other end of the spectrum. Yeah, I think I'd say at this point we're pretty pleased with where we are right now. I don't see moving to either end of that spectrum, at least anytime soon. But like I said in my comments earlier, we've got to consider all of the opportunities to release value from the business, particularly when perhaps all the cash flow that's coming that you saw on the chart maybe isn't being recognized today. So we're going to look at all those opportunities, but I wouldn't expect anything drastic in either direction in the next little while. Okay, so I think I'm being given the sign that we need to move on. Coming up next will be Bill Yardley, who, as I mentioned, runs the gas business, a very big business for Enbridge now. So welcome, Bill Yardley.